And we start with a presentation by Karen. Are you taking the lead in this?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. For the record, my name is Karen Levy. I'm general counsel for CICERA. I'll be presenting to the board today pertaining to item number 5 on the agenda. On my left is Mr. Tim Hoppe. He's CICERA's retirement services manager, and he may chime in as we talk about some of the calculations of the benefits pertaining to this, to the issue. Also, Mr. Harvey Lederman, the board's fiduciary counsel, was unable to attend today, but we do have attorney Maytak Chin on my right, and she is with Reed Smith. Today we also have, because this issue pertains to the pension for Mr. Wilmot, he did have an opportunity to come in today, be present, and present to the board as well. His attorney is here from the Raines Lucia Stern firm, Mr. Tim Talbot. Good morning. Is your client here today?
He will not be attending. I'm here as representative.
Okay, thank you very much, Tim. And of course, Tim will have an opportunity later on to address the board and go through his written submission and position on behalf of his client. The agenda materials include CICERA's written submission, and that is a memo on behalf of CICERA, as well as exhibits A through L. The materials also include Mr. Wilmot's written submission, and that is a brief authored by the Raines Lucia Stern firm on behalf of Mr. Wilmot, as well as declarations and exhibits. They provided a declaration of Mr. Wilmot with exhibits 1 through 7, as well as Mr. Talbot's declaration with exhibits 1 through 5. And that is what your agenda item includes in terms of written materials for today. And so I'd like to start by summarizing in the CICERA memo the factual background for this issue, as well as the applicable law, CICERA's recommendation, and answer any questions you might have. The felony forfeiture provision that we are here to discuss today is found in Government Code Section 7522.75. That was part of PEPRA. PEPRA stands for the California Public Employees Pension Reform Act of 2013. The issue here today is that on December 15, 2015, CICERA member John Wilmot was convicted of a job-related felony. CICERA determined that all of the elements of the PEPRA felony forfeiture provision were met and advised Mr. Wilmot of the forfeiture of benefits he accrued, as well as the return of employee contributions that he made after the first commission of the crime, the embezzlement crime here, pursuant to PEPRA Government Code Section 7522.72. The member has contested CICERA's determination, arguing that Section 7522.72 does not apply to him because he retired in December 2012, 2 weeks before the effective date of the statute. And the purpose of this agenda item here today is to allow the member the opportunity to present his position through his attorney and any information that he feels is relevant to the board on this matter. I'm going to go through some of the factual background here and summarize what we have in the materials for you. Mr. Wilmot was employed as a fire captain by his former employer, the Contra Costa County Fire Protection District, and we refer to his employer as the fire district here. And on December 15, 2015, Mr. Wilmot was convicted of felony embezzlement in violation of Penal Code Sections 503 and 508. On page 2 of CICERA's memorandum, we do have those provisions from the Penal Code for you, and they define what the felony crime of embezzlement is, and it is the fraudulent misappropriation of property that belongs to another, which has come into the member's control or care by virtue of his employment as a clerk, agent, or servant employee of the owner of the property. We do have in Exhibit B some court documents that were obtained from the criminal court. On page 27 of Exhibit B, you will find the felony and misdemeanor clerk's docket and minutes showing the conviction, and that the conviction was for count number 2, felony embezzlement in violation of Penal Code sections 503 and 508. Wilmot's commission of the felony embezzlement was conduct arising out of or in the performance of his official duties. He was convicted of willfully, unlawfully, and fraudulently misappropriating property from his employer, the fire district, and the property came into his control or care by virtue of his employment with the fire district. The earliest date of the commission of his felony embezzlement from the fire district was January 1, 2000. And the felonious activity continued through December 31, 2012. The court entered a guilty plea and ordered formal probation for 5 years, imprisonment for 180 days, fines, restitutions, and also ordered Mr. Wilmot to stay away from his from any fire district employees unless they contact Mr. Wilmot. As I mentioned earlier, Mr. Wilmot is a SACERA member, and he retired on December 13, 2012. So once SACERA received information about the conviction, it reviewed the conviction papers, and it reviewed the applicable law and made a determination that the PEPRA felony forfeiture provision applied to Mr. Wilmot. On April 22, 2016, SACERA notified Mr. Wilmot in writing of that determination. A copy of that letter is included in your agenda packet as Exhibit F. I'd like you to turn to Exhibit F. That is the letter from SACERA to Mr. Wilmot. It goes through in detail what the PEPRA provision is and why it requires the forfeiture of Mr. Wilmot's pension benefits. It goes through in detail the conviction background and information. It goes through calculations of what needs to be expunged from the member's account. Ultimately, on page 6 of the letter from SACERA, SACERA notifies the member that he does have the right to challenge SACERA's determination, and if he does so, he must do so within 15 days. And SACERA advised the member, again on page 6 of the letter, that if his written challenge is provided timely, that the matter will next be considered by the SACERA Retirement Board at a duly noticed public meeting. In response to that letter, SACERA received a timely written challenge on behalf of Mr. Wilmot, and that is included in Exhibit G of your agenda packet. After that, the parties engaged in meet and confer to talk about some of the procedural aspects of how this matter is going to be heard, and agreed on a mutually convenient date for the board's consideration of the issue, and that was going to be August 24th, 2016, today. So next I'd like to cover some of the PEPRA law and how it applies here to this issue. I'd like to turn your attention to page 3 of the SACERA memo. At the bottom, we talk about two PEPRA provisions, Government Code Section 7522.72, as well as Section 7522.74. That's at the very bottom of the page, page 3. And Section 7522.72 applies to those hired before January 1, 2013. Section 7... No, the memo. It's page 3 of the SACERA memo. That should be your first document in your packet. And on page 3 at the very bottom, we explain Provision 7522.72, and that applies to those hired before January 1, 2013, whereas Section 7522.74 applies to those hired on or after January 1, 2013. So here, Mr. Wilmot was hired by the fire district prior to January 1, 2013, and so the PEPRA provision that applies to him is Section 7522.72, and we have a portion of that provision for you on page 4 of the SACERA memorandum, and that is subsection C1 of Government Code Section 7522.72, and it reads, "A member shall forfeit all the rights and benefits earned or accrued from the earliest date of the commission of any felony described in Subdivision B," and that means job-related felony, "to the forfeiture date inclusive. The rights and benefits shall remain forfeited notwithstanding any reduction in sentence or expungement of the conviction following the date of the member's conviction. Rights and benefits attributable to service performed prior to the date of the first commission of the felony for which the member was convicted shall not be forfeited as a result of this section." So this is where the legislature gave us the scope of what the forfeiture is. The forfeiture goes to benefits that accrue from the time, the date of the first commission of the job-related felony, which here is embezzlement, until the date of forfeiture, which is defined as the date of conviction. That is what is expunged from the member's account. And we'll talk about it later, but during that same period of time, of course, the employee, while an active member of the system, is making employee contributions, and the statute specifies that those employee contributions during that period of time are to be returned to the member as part of this forfeiture. So benefits are forfeited, and the member is receiving back their employee contributions during that time period. Anything that occurs prior to the date of the first commission of the job-related felony, here embezzlement, remains with the member. That is not forfeited. And next, and I mentioned the employee contributions. PEPRA specifically says that the employee contributions must be returned without interest to the member unless otherwise ordered by a court or determined by the pension administrator. That's found in Government Code Section 7522.72, Subdivision D1. And so what SACERA did once we received the conviction papers and reviewed how the law applies to those, and that's found on page 4 of the memo at the bottom, is we went through the elements that are specified in the statute and concluded whether the facts meet or don't meet those conditions. And so number one, the statute requires that the person whose pension is being forfeited be a member of SACERA, and that is correct. Mr. Wilmot is a member of SACERA. Also, Mr. Wilmot, as I mentioned earlier, was a public employee first employed by the fire district before January 1, 2013. Therefore, we look to Government Code Section 7522.72. And also, Wilmot was convicted of a felony under state law after the effective date of Section 7522.72 for conduct arising out of or in the performance of his official duties, in that he was convicted for felony embezzlement from his employer, which is a job-related felony. And you might have seen from Mr. Wilmot's attorney's submission that they make arguments about the statute doesn't apply to him because he retired prior to the effective date of the statute. We disagree with that because we think that the statute by its own wording applies to retired members as well, as long as the conviction occurs after 1-1-2013. And that's because the statute uses the word members. Members, that means active and retired or deferred members of the retirement system. The statute also refers to a notice obligation on the part of the public employer. The public employer has to notify by law the retirement system of the former employee's conviction or the current employee's conviction. And the wording of the statute is, and that's found on page 5 of the CICERA memo, second paragraph in the middle. We explain that PEPRA clearly states that the felony forfeiture applies to former employees as long as they are members of this. Of the retirement system and their conviction occurs after January 1, 2013. PEPRA states that the public employer, here the fire district, that employs or employed in the past tense, employed a public employee, must provide notice to the retirement system of the job-related felony conviction within 90 days of the conviction. And so the legislature clearly contemplated and worded the statute such that it would imply to former employees so long as they're members of the retirement system. I want to refer to some of the other arguments that are made on behalf of Mr. Wilmot, and that is he has constitutional challenges to PEPRA, he argues that it's applying the felony forfeiture to him is a violation of his vested rights, his constitutional rights to his pension, and he's arguing that it is also an ex post facto law. And as we point out in the CICERA memo, under the law, the retirement system is not authorized to make that determination of whether a statute is or isn't constitutional. That is something that is only within the province of the courts to do. And under the California Constitution, the agency, CICERA, and the board, who is charged with the ministerial duty to administer the law, can't decide not to apply the law because of constitutional issues. We believe that CICERA is obligated to apply the statute as written, and we do think that it applies to Mr. Wilmot, and that the forfeiture must occur. And so our recommendation here today is that if the board decides to implement the PEPRA forfeiture provision, it would be implemented with effective with the September 1, 2016 retiree payroll. We have a memorandum that Mr. Hoppe authored that explains all of the forfeiture calculations and how that works in terms of backing out service credit, refunding to the employee contributions without interest. That is found in Exhibit L of the packet. And at this point in time, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Hoppe to summarize for the board those forfeiture numbers, if you will.
Okay, thank you, Karen. Based upon the information we received on the time of the conviction of the felony when it first occurred, prior to or at the time of his retirement, Mr. Wilmot had 27 years of service. Based upon his employment prior to the first felony conviction, which was January 1, 2000, he had 14 years of service, a little over 14 years of service. And then following the post-commission of the crime, he had 13 years of service. So what we did in our calculation is reduce 13 years of service from his retirement calculation. As far as employee contributions, during his career, his contributions were approximately $289,000. Prior to the felony conviction, approximately $39,000 were contributed by Mr. Wilmont. Following the conviction of January 1, 2000, approximately $250,000 were contributed. Based upon his age and when he actually retired in 2012, we went back as though he retired on December 31st, 1999, and recalculate him based as though he was a deferred member. And in exhibit, I believe you said it was L, on page 3, is a recap of the payments. You'll notice his first check that he received following the process of his retirement application was April 1, 2013. The overpayment schedule goes to August 1, 2016. The second column identifies the amount of benefits he has received from CSERA. The third column is the recalculation of his benefits based upon his deferred date, removing the years of service and the contributions. And then the last column, the fourth column, recaps the amount overpaid, which as of August 1st is approximately $269,000. Looking at the amount of employee contributions that he is on target to forfeit, the $250,000, it currently puts him, that CSERA has overpaid him by $19,500, and that we should recoup that dollar amount through a further reduction of his recalculated benefit.
And I think that concludes our presentation, unless there's any questions.
Just one, I want to make sure I understand, Tim. So you recalculated his retirement as if he had retired December 31st, 1999, right?
His employment ended December 31st, 1999, and then we deferred him to
2012.
Yes, exactly. I'm sorry if that wasn't clear. Oh. Yeah, he was not eligible for a retirement benefit in 1999 before the felony, based upon his age and service.
Any further questions of Karen or Tim? I think at this point then, Mr. Talbot, I believe, is speaking for Mr. Wilmot.
I am.
You would go to the podium. Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you for affording Mr. Wilmot the opportunity to present a pre-deprivation response to proposed action by CSERA. I wanted to say initially that given the fact that this is in the nature of a pre-deprivation response, our presentation will be confined to the propriety of this particular proceeding. The parties were required to simultaneously submit their materials, which you have. We weren't afforded an opportunity to respond or reply to what the other parties submitted. So necessarily, I'm going to spend some time replying to what CSERA filed for you. As an initial matter, I wanted to make an observation about the evidentiary or factual materials that were submitted. CSERA's presentation is laden with quite a bit of documentation surrounding the felony conviction, and actually some information that really is a little bit irrelevant, most of it being irrelevant. The fact of the conviction and the fact that it was a qualifying conviction under the statute hasn't been contested. So there's a lot of information that's added in there that, frankly, is just irrelevant. And in my experience, when you add that kind of information into a case that is ostensibly one of a legal issue, application of a statute or interpretation, you do that to help invoke an emotional response from the reader. You try to inflame the situation and detract from the legal issues that you really need to be focused on and make more of an emotional response. And I want to hope and urge that this body does not fall victim or prey to that kind of emotional response. Similarly, There's a reference to Mr. Fred Wayne Rospero, who was the executive director of PEPRA. And we're here today, I hope, to look at facts and evidence and statutory analysis. And we've got a paragraph in Cesera's presentation that's based on speculation, pure speculation, on information and belief that something happened to a former PERS employee, with the clear import or implication that you should feel comfortable applying this statute to Mr. Wilmont because of some anecdotal references to somebody else.
What's an executive director of PEPRA?
I'm sorry, PERS. I misspoke. I'm sorry. Executive director of PERS, who was convicted of a felony prior to, he actually had separated prior to 1113. The problem, of course, is that we don't have any precedent. We don't know all of the details or circumstances or why he chose not to challenge a reduction to his pension. For all I know, it could have been part of a prearranged agreement between the parties. It has zero evidentiary value here. It has no persuasive impact on this body. So what we're here to do today and what we've alleged is that the statute at issue here, Government Code Section 7522.72, simply does not apply to Mr. Wilmont. So what we're asking you to do is what you're charged with doing, which is interpreting that statute and then deciding in the first instance whether it does apply to him. If it doesn't apply to him, all of the analysis that follows about the statute is completely irrelevant. Now, in deciding what to do, you do, as an administrative agency, have the right to engage in what is essentially statutory construction. And you have the ability to utilize the common principles and tools for statutory construction. The first thing you do is you read it and you look at it. And if it says something expressly, then you follow what it expressly says. If it is ambiguous or confusing in some way, then you look to secondary sources to try to find it. When you do all of that, you have the right to do what everybody does that looks at it. You interpret that with your own understanding and knowledge as an agency of what the existing law is at the time. So you get to look at principles of statutory construction. You get to look at what's legal and what's not legal. And so when you assess this statute, you get to consider, if we apply it this way, is it going to run contrary to the law? And that's all we're asking you to do. And we cited in our brief a number of examples how Cesera's purported application of this statute in the manner in which they urge you to do would run contrary to the law. That is an element of statutory interpretation in the first instance when looking to whether it applies to Mr. Wilmont.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Are you claiming that the statute is ambiguous?
I don't believe the statute is ambiguous. I believe that Cesera's interpretation is incorrect, and I'm going to tell you that. But here's what I want to go ahead.
If it's not ambiguous, isn't the correct mode to analyze the statute the plain meaning rule?
You start with the plain meaning, and one of the fundamental presumptions with any new enactment of a statute is that it is intended to apply prospectively. So if you look at a statute and you intend to apply it retroactively, which in this case, if you accept the recommendation to apply this, you are in fact deciding to apply it to an individual who retired, was no longer a public employee, was entitled to the full pension that was payable to him before this law went into effect. So if you apply it to him, what you are saying is this law was intended and designed to go back and grab somebody who was not a public employee, unwind his benefits, divest him of something that he's earned under the law, and reduce that. So you need to look at the statute and find that intent in it, because you're being charged with applying it. So against a presumption that a law is not retroactive, what the California Supreme Court has said is if a statute is intended to apply retroactively, you have to find express language in the statute saying we intend this to apply retroactively. So going to your statement about express language, nowhere in this statute can you find it says this is intended to apply to a former employee, a retiree, or someone who was already entitled and receiving a pension before the law was enacted. You can't find it.
Well, but doesn't the statute expressly apply to members?
So let me, if you
indulge me. Is the answer yes?
Well, Members are an express term in the statute. But let me begin with this, if I may, because I believe this is my opportunity to make a response, and I do want to answer your question, but I do think that there is a sequence in which the answer follows from that, if you will indulge me for just
That's
a moment.
Fine.
Okay. So what I want to do is start from a little background. We have to recall that there is a body of pension law that existed prior to the enactment of PEPRA. PEPRA comes into effect on January 1st, 2013. And it overlays itself on the pension law that exists. And it does a few things. It eliminates certain provisions, it adds certain provisions, and it modifies other provisions. Significantly, and what CICERA doesn't want to deal with, is it also included its own definitional terms. New terms, specifically applicable to PEPRA, which is overlaying itself on the existing body of law, changing things. It is common for the legislature to say, for purposes of this enactment, these definitions apply. That is how they can distinguish between how they want it to work here versus how they might want to have it work in a different context. That is exactly what the legislature did in this case. Government Code Section 7522.04 contains the definitional terms. Included in those definitional terms are public employee. Public employee is defined as an employee of a public agency. It also defines member very differently than CERL or any other existing statutes. So you can find, and it is true, that a member can be defined as an active, a retired, or a deferred, somebody who didn't take their money out or didn't do anything, right? But PEPRA defines it differently. PEPRA defines a member for purposes of application of this act as a public employee who is a member. And when you get back to the definition of public employee, that is someone employed by a public employer. So I stepped back and I said, okay, well, what did PEPRA do? Everyone in this room knows that PEPRA, when it went into effect, was looking at two groups of employees. The first group were future employees, those who were going to be hired on or after January 1, 2013. We commonly refer to those as PEPRA employees or PEPRA members, right? So the forfeiture section 7522.74 applies to that group of employees. Then we had those people that we've all been troubled with, the existing employees that when PEPRA lands on top of them, what are we going to do? And those were the employees that were employed as of 1-1 or January 1, 2013, but had been hired prior to the enactment of that, before that date. And we looked at those, and by default, since the statute refers to new employees, by default, we coined the terms classic or legacy employees for those who were employed and still employed at the time that PEPRA was enacted. Now, we certainly, and it wouldn't be proper to take someone who was previously a public employee who's receiving a pension or otherwise entitled to the payment of the pension before January 1, 2013 and call them a classic employee or a classic member, you wouldn't do it. They're retired. So against the backdrop, if you don't lose sight of what PEPRA did, it was directed at those people who were employed on 1-1-13, hired before, are going to retire some point in the future, and those people yet to be hired who have their whole careers in front of them. Those are the two classes of people. Now, what CICERA doesn't point out to you is that the legislature was very specific in using that term, public employee, and a new definition of member for purposes of this, public employee member, those who are working now. The statute, when you read 7522.72, begins in subsection A with, this section shall apply to a public employee. Look to the definition of public employee, someone employed by a public employer. Now, to distinguish from the PEPRA employees versus the classic or legacy, we go first employed by a public employer before January 1, legacy employee. Similar language for the PEPRA employee on or after. Both require employment. Okay? So when you read the first, who does this apply to, you don't get past that. Because anyone who is not a public employee at the point that this is enacted is not covered by it. And the legislature knew how to refer to people who were already retired or people who were already receiving pension benefits. in section 7522.56, and you may know that as the secondary employment or the retired annuitant employment language, that statute plainly refers to persons retired and persons who are receiving a pension. It doesn't refer to them as public employees. It doesn't refer to them as anything other than retirees or persons receiving a pension. The legislature knows how to distinguish between active current public employees and retirees. It did so in PEPRA, and it used very different language when it did so. When you don't have on the face of this document something saying it's intended to apply retroactively, then you've got to find some intent from this. And this is what CICERA is urging you to do, is to try to infer an intent to apply this retroactively to somebody who is not an employee who is already retired. And so how are they doing that? Well, they're trying to focus on the term member. And here's where that analysis fails. First, as I indicated, the definition of member under PEPRA, which lands on top of existing law in 2013, has a different definition of member than that general definition that CICERA points to. That now narrows the application of the statute to active employees at the time and not to the other groups. And that's perfectly within the legislature's intent, and it is clearly a clarification of who it is to be applied to.
Can I ask you a question on, yes, on that point? In terms of legislative intent, did you have the opportunity to review any committee analyses, Senator, Assembly, any other information that supports your view?
So we have not pulled all of the committee analysis from Sacramento. What we have looked at is the legislative history, the same information that was attached to the document. And I'm glad that you raised that, because I wanted to call out on page 5 of CICERA's submission, and reference was made to it, that the legislature amended section 7522.72 in 2014 for the specific purpose of sweeping in, quote, members who are not active employees on January 1, 2013. There's no citation to that assertion, because you can't find it, because the document that's attached does not say that. It does not say that it was intended to sweep people who weren't otherwise covered into it. All that statute that did, and we talk about it in our papers as well, what it did is it made some amendments, and these were the third round of amendments in 2014, and it replaced the word public employee with member in subsection C1. And it says that that's to clarify who it's applying to. Well, that's fine. If you have a member under the definition of PEPRA under C1 and their benefits are going to be impaired, it makes sense not to confuse that with the earlier sections that talk about first it applies to a public employee, then if a public employee is convicted, then that public employee who is also a member will have their benefits impaired in a certain way. It's for consistency. But there's no statement of an intent to come back and change something. And significantly, those original definitions of member and public employee that were enacted concurrently with PEPRA or as part of PEPRA were not amended. They weren't changed. So when you read that definition of member, a public employee who is a member, conforming amendments later don't change the substantive impact of that, that it has to apply to someone who is a public employee. So, to me, here we go. We're trying to find an intent in there to do this. Now, with respect to intent, getting back to overcoming that presumption that I mentioned, California Supreme Court has said that if you are going to try to infer a retroactive intent, you must find, quote, clear and unavoidable implication, and another quote, unequivocal and inflexible import of the terms and the manifest intention of the legislature to make it retroactive. That's not all things being equal, it's retroactive. Oh, I'm unsure, so it's retroactive. It's the opposite. If you can't find clear intent to apply it to somebody who was already retired, you can't. That's not the proper statutory interpretation. Another point that I wanted to to address, and it was also in the papers from Cicera, is the statement that PEPRA clearly states that the felony forfeiture applies to former employees so long as they are members of the retirement system and their conviction occurs after January 1, 2013. Again, no citation to that. The reason being is it's a compilation of snippets of the statute put together. But here's where I wanted to start for this. There is no reference anywhere in 7522.72 to a conviction occurring after January 1, 2013. Cicera is just adding language into the statute. There is nothing in my papers that purport to add language that isn't there. I am using what the statute says in the definitional section from PEPRA itself. This reference to a conviction having to occur after January 1, 2013 is added. It's not there. That's why there's no citation to it. What Cicera wants you to do is to infer that it only applies to convictions after 1-1-13, and they do that by the notice requirement. So you heard mention of this notice requirement. First, it requires the employee to notify the employer if they're convicted, and then the employer to notify the retirement system of a conviction. Obviously, prior to PEPRA's enactment in 1-1-13, there was no such notice requirement. So the obligation to provide that notice didn't arise before that. But it doesn't mean that it only applies to convictions that occur after 1-1-13. And significantly, the statute in both places says that if that notification does not occur, it does not negate application of the statute. Meaning whether you get the notification or not is irrelevant. The issue is whether or not a public employee is convicted of a qualifying felony and then you apply the statute. Why is that important? Because if you don't have that 1-1-13, a conviction after 1-1-13, then it's open to any conviction in time. If you really literally read what Cicera wants you to decide here or the position they want you to take, it applies to anybody who retired before. And if they don't read in this requirement only to convictions that occur after January 1, 2013, then it applies to any member who was ever convicted of a job-related felony. That would put the burden on this body to go back and search its records from the beginning of time. Because counsel said you have a ministerial duty to apply it, I submit that you'd have to go back in time and find everybody who's retired who may have been convicted of a qualifying felony and go back and apply it. Well, that's absurd, right? That's an absurd result. You're not going to do that. And the absurdity of it is why you have to say it only applies to convictions afterwards. But why read in that requirement and read out the public employee requirement when the public employee requirement is expressed in the statute and the reference to a conviction after January 1, 2013 doesn't exist? It's gymnastics to try to get you to believe that this thing was intended to apply retroactively, which it's not. The concluding point on this is that you can't find anything on the face of this document or in the legislative history that tells you it was intended to undo the benefits of somebody who's already retired. And therefore, you can't infer that that was the intent. And if you infer that that was the intent, then the burden on you is to be able to demonstrate in the statute itself, unequivocal evidence of that intent, or in the legislative history, unequivocal evidence of that intent. And if you can't find it, then it does run afoul of the constitutional concerns that we expressed. That doesn't necessarily mean that we're telling you decide that that statute is unconstitutional. I'm telling you that I think the statute, at least in the way I'm reading it, doesn't apply to him, so you don't run afoul of the constitutional questions. But if you choose to apply it to him, then your decision to apply a statute that doesn't apply to him could be problematic. And under the principles of statutory interpretation, that isn't something that you have to do. You will be making a decision. You know, it's bigger than Mr. Wilmot here. Because again, as I've said, you have the potential to have to apply this retroactively to a whole lot of other people. So the decision you make, right, it's not one guy. You're starting to set a policy of how you want to apply this statute going forward. And I would just urge you to be, you know, careful about your analysis. Set aside the hyperbole and the characterization of what it was, and look to the statute and say, does it do what we are urged to do? Does it carry forward what we're told we should be doing with this? And if it doesn't, then you should reject that.
You're saying that we would go back, for the people that were convicted before January 1st, 2013, is that what you're implying we would do?
I'm not implying that you would do anything. What I'm,
that's an option we may do.
No, I'm not saying that that's an option. What I'm saying is that if you don't have that limiting language that Cicero wants you to read into the statute, that it only applies to convictions that occur after the fact, then it applies to any conviction without a time element. And I'm just saying is that you could read that to say, if you also accept that it applies to somebody who retired before 1113, then you could say anybody who was convicted. I'm just saying it's an absurd. I'm actually saying it's absurd. Well, because it doesn't have a time limit. It says a conviction, if there's no time limit, then it's anybody convicted of a job-related felony at any time who was a, quote, member, if you take their, not a public employee, but a member, and under their definition, a member is a retiree. That's why it falls apart, because that's not PEPRA's definition of a retiree. So I would actually say it's absurd. I would say you wouldn't do that because that's not the way the statute's worded. That's not the way the statute should be applied. You couldn't get to that result. But to avoid the absurdity of the argument they're making, they have to read in that limitation that doesn't exist. That's what I'm saying. So our brief has a number of other arguments, and I think they're spelled out fairly clearly. But again, just on the face of the statute itself, and not ignoring the definitions in PEPRA. That is the key. That is significant. PEPRA has a specific application, and we know classic employees, PEPRA employees. If I'm neither of those on 1113, it doesn't apply to me. You got any questions? Okay. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Do we have any public comment? Yes, if you would go up to the microphone.
Hi, I'm Gil Caravanis, 37-year employee of Contra Costa Fire and still currently working. I happen to be very good friends with John Wilmont, and what we're going through with John is an atrocity. I've read the charges that Ms. Levy has put out there, and so much of it is fabricated, and she's tried to taint him as a horrible person. He has changed things around. He has made full restitution, and one of the things she didn't put in there was that the felony that he was convicted of will be converted to a misdemeanor in a specific period of time. With that being said, the time frames that have come up and the things, the interpretations she has given, it's a complete stretch to what we're trying to do here. Mr. Wilmont paid into this retirement system. He retired prior to, as many people do in life, you know, such as the people that went retired for a terminal pay. You know, do we go after them for that? The terminal pay, that's a whole other issue that we need to, you know, get into, but that's not for today. All I'm asking you is to consider Mr. Wilmont's position and rule in his favor. Thank you very much.
Questions for speaker before? Trustee G?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. Apparently not. Thank you.
Thank you.
At this point, we are under deliberations. We can either start with a motion and then go to discussion, or we can discuss in advance. Karen, do you want to make any kind of rebuttal first to Mr. Talbot's presentation?
No, thank you. I think all of the points are addressed in our written memorandum.
Okay.
Exhibits.
It's now at the pleasure of the board.
I'll make a motion to I will move to implement the felony forfeiture provision as to Mr. Wilmot's retirement benefits in accordance with Government Code Section 7522.72 and all of the information that we've been provided, starting with the September 1st, 2016 retiree payroll.
Second.
Okay. Discussion.
Yeah, I'd like to say some things. First off, I want to say I'm not speaking on behalf of, you know, the crimes or anything that John Wilmot was convicted of, and I'm looking specifically at the law, and I've read it many, many, many times. I didn't feel necessary to recuse myself from this. I'm an acquaintance. I knew John, but I'm not friends with him, and I find I'm not clouded in my decision-making or anything, and I don't feel swayed towards John or otherwise. Just have a few words. First off, this is a definitive question of application because in my research, just to on CalPERS website, in the frequently asked questions section, there's actually a statement that says regarding felony forfeiture. It says any current or future public official or employee convicted of a felony while carrying out his or her official duties in seeking elected office or employment. So it says any current or future public official. And this is regarding AB 340 and how it applies to felony forfeitures. So PEPRA came into law January 1st, 2013, and clearly defines language to discern the difference between an employee's hired before and after January 2013. That was the theme of all of AB 340. It also uses language to support retirees, but I didn't find anything of actually applying retroactive things to retirees. It only references them in terms of defining eligible hiring for rehiring a retiree. And uses the word retiree 7 times in the language. With PEPRA centering around issues of current employees, retirees, and vested rights, it would be obvious to me and obvious in the language used by the authors that they understood this difference. If the legislation truly intended for this to apply to a retiree, no longer an employee, they would have clearly referenced that in section 752272. In terms of a member being referenced, it is true, but I believe this is referencing in terms of their forfeiture. If you reference section 752272, section A, as the attorney just represented, it says that the section shall apply to a public employee first employed. So it doesn't say this section shall apply to a member. So 752272A takes it all away. John Wilmot was not an employee as of January 1st, 2013. PEPRA defines clearly when they were talking about employees, individuals, the differentiation of hired before January 1st, 2013 or after. However, PEPRA really only mentions applying to retirees when a retiree is eligible to be, like I said. So the law came into effect January 1st, 2013, and Wilmot was no longer employed with Contra Costa County Fire, and he had previously retired as an employee from Contra Costa Fire. In Pepper's Law 7522.04, definition of a public employee, in quotes, means an officer including one who's elected or appointed or an employee of a public employer. Again, John was not an employee. Additionally, Pepper makes it very clear when it defines retirees versus employees. One thing I also found interesting is in 7522.70, which is a previous section, the language says this section shall apply to any elected public officer who takes public office or is reelected to public office on or after January 1st, 2006. And then subsection B, to my point, if an elected public officer is convicted during or after holding office. So in that section, they actually reference any time that the person held office. So if it was the intent of the law, it would have said that and been very clear, I believe, in 7522.72. Also, my last point is the amendment was in 2014, and it attacked, as the attorney said, subsection C change the subsection C from public employee to a member. If they truly intended it for truly apply to all members, I believe that they would definitively have attacked and changed section A, which uses the word employee. But they didn't. It was not amended in section A. It still says employee, and John Wilmot was not an employee as of January 1st, 2013. So I disagree. I don't think it applies, and I hope that you look to that. I just don't think it applies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Is there any relevance to the felony being converted to a misdemeanor in this situation? I mean, we're applying it because it's a felony conviction, but is there
if he does his time and it's reduced to a misdemeanor and he does it according to courts, is there any does that change anything?
Statute, right?
I think isn't that addressed on page 4 where it says the rights and benefits shall remain forfeited notwithstanding any reduction in sentence.
Okay.
Yeah, or expungement. Mm-hmm. I take that to apply.
The legislature wrote it that way, correct?
It's my understanding.
Well, I think we owe it to our members to voice our opinion when we make a decision, and I've always said that. And when I was a chair, I kind of made the point of asking each person to indicate why they choose to vote the way they choose. So I need to, because I believe in that, I need to express my opinion on this. And when this first surfaced, I went to the law and read the law because I was looking for, well, why can we do this or should we do this? Do we have a right to do it? And when I read the law, I beg to differ with Mr. Wilmot's attorney, but when I read the law, I kind of came to the same conclusion that our attorney did. And I'm sorry, Will, but I see it in a different light. Because I think when it says, and I think the issue of public employer and member can be argued someplace else, I don't see it being argued here. I see that the law stated, and our attorney clearly stated that on page 3, and I read it in the law when I read the law, and that's when I said to myself, I know now how I'm going to vote. And it says when the law shall apply to public employee first employed by a public employer or first elected or appointed to an office before January 1, 2013. So that gave me the indication that anybody that was hired before January 1 of 2013 comes under this law. And so I took it to mean that, and that's the way I believe. So, unfortunately, I'm going to vote in favor of the motion because I think Mr. Wilmot came under the provisions of this law. And, you know, leave it to the courts to decide the other parts of it. But that's how I feel, and that's how I interpreted it. So there you have mine.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
Yeah, I'm going to support the motion. Jerry Tellis just gave an excellent rendition of what the plain meaning rule does in practical effect when you read a statute without resorting to any collateral materials like legislative history. I think the plain meaning of this statute is that it would apply and does apply to Mr. Wilmot's situation. And for the record and for Mr. Talbot's benefit, the inclusion of materials regarding the plea, the ultimate conviction, to me is not intended to evoke some kind of an emotional response. I think it's important for the record to understand that the member pled to this felony. That established the basis for the conviction. And the dates in the felony information with respect to the activity are what govern the ultimate calculation of benefits. So there's a very, you know, clear and reasonable purpose to have that information. It has nothing to do with emotion. This is about applying a statute. So I wanted to say that for the record so that there's no misunderstanding. So I think the statute is clear on its face. I think the intention to apply it to members, which would include Mr. Wilmot, is plain on its face. So I'm going to support the motion.
Gens.
Okay, and I will also be supporting the motion. I think what is also compelling, and we aren't opening the floodgate to going back to every retiree, is the fact that this conviction took place after January 1st, 2013, and I think that's a very relevant factor. This is a legal issue, and I think there are different ways of interpreting it, both this provision and whether there are constitutional implications to this with regard to it being applied to somebody and vested benefits. I think, obviously, this will be settled in litigation in a lawsuit, and at this point, though, I think we do have an obligation to our employees to appropriately interpret it in a way that is protecting the rights of our members, and so I will be supporting it.
One last point. To Jerry's point, also Scott's, regarding Section A, previously employed, that's mentioned before 2013 of January. That's mentioned throughout PEPRA all over the place. And the reason they do that is to differentiate between a legacy, you know, member, and I think it applies to current employees. There's nothing in PEPRA that goes back and applies something retroactively to any of your retirees before January 1st, 2013. So that's my point. You know, they mentioned who's employed before and after January, because those are two different employee groups, if you will, in PEPRA. But it doesn't. There's nothing in PEPRA that I know of that goes back and changes benefits for retirees prior to January 1st, 2013.
So. Okay. Seeing no further discussion, this is a vote I think we should take on a individual basis. Allen.
Yes.
Anderson.
Yes.
Gordon.
Yes.
McDonald.
Yes.
Phillips. Yes. Rodriguez.
Yes.
Smithy.
Yes.
Tellis.
Yes.
Watts.
Yes.
Vote is unanimous in favor of the motion. Motion passes. Okay, we are moving to